Thank you for tuning in to the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development podcast series. My name is Carrie Robidoux, and I'm an Extension Educator in Youth Development. In this podcast, we will discuss how to have crucial conversations that are both productive and successful. And I think a particularly important topic right now, while we're experiencing a lot of change and uncertainty, both at work and in our personal lives. Joining me to share her insights on this topic is Brenda Schaefer. She's a program leader with the Center for Youth Development, and I thank you for joining me today, Brenda.
Oh, it's a joy, Carrie. I know we've been talking about this for a while, so appreciate the opportunity.
I have been trying to loop you into this podcast series for a while, and our schedules finally are making that happen. So thank you for joining me. Brenda, let's start off with you telling us about your work for the Center for Youth Development, and I think specifically around how your work with developing staff skills around crucial conversations has emerged.
Sure. I think I kind of stumbled across it. I'm on my 34th year with the university, and for many years, almost half that time, I was in a county position working directly with volunteers and young people and partners. Of course, anytime you're working with people, conflict or differences of opinion is often part of that. And whenever you're working in a program that involves young people, emotions come into that as well. It was always part of my work then. When I got into this position as a program leader, I had the opportunity to attend a training on a relatively new framework at the time. Crucial Conversations was a new book had come out, and it was research that had been done over the course of many years that involved probably about 100,000 participants. But the authors really began by wanting to learn why some people and organizations are more effective than others. And what was it that they did? You know, could we clone that if we knew what they did so everybody could be more effective? Over a 25-year period, they asked people to identify those individuals in their workplace who could really get things done. Some patterns emerged. Some people's names were brought up by one or two colleagues. Some people's names found their way onto lists of five or six colleagues. And then there were this handful of people and organizations that almost everybody interviewed brought up their name. The authors of the book, Crucial Conversations, the researchers said that they kind of named these the best of the best. They followed those individuals over the course of time to find out what was it that they did differently. And the one thing they all did uniquely well was how they behaved and handled when others disagreed with them. When there was high stakes and emotion involved and differences of opinion, these individuals found a way to get all the relevant information out, their own information and that of the other person, so that you could get to solutions. And so at that training, I really recognized that this was something that we could use in our organization. You know, as a program leader, then I was working probably one of my assignments was to give some leadership to our volunteer systems work in the state. And many of our staff find themselves in situations where they're having conflictual conversations. Either they're avoiding those conversations that they need to have, or they're having them and not holding them well. Walking away feeling as if they maybe screwed that up or are to blame for how things have turned out. Walking away from those conversations feeling as if the other individual, the volunteer, the parent is unhappy with them personally. And so it really became clear to me that it was time to provide our staff with some tools. And so that's when we started training. We trained everybody during the course of that year. And then now we train all of our new staff as they come into our organization.
That really sets the stage for how important it is to be able to communicate well. But then especially in those, I mean, you're really talking about those higher intensity, higher stake conversations that we're having where we're not agreeing with each other. And it's how we handle that and how we work through the conversation that makes the difference in the end and truly makes a difference in how people look at us and perhaps our professional career as we move forward. Let's jump in then, even deeper with that crucial conversation. What are the elements of a crucial conversation and what does it mean to be engaged in that kind of mm-hmm. communication with somebody?
Yeah. Well, sometimes crucial conversation comes on us and we're not expecting it. Sometimes we know we need to have one. And so the majority of our conversations are run-of-the-mill conversations, but there's like 5 to 10% of the conversations that we have that are disproportionately important in that they can have an adverse effect or a positive effect on our relationships, on our work satisfaction, and productivity. So those conversations, the authors of the book termed crucial conversations. And crucial conversations have three elements to them. One being that opinions vary. So for example, you're talking to a volunteer who feels she should be chair of a county committee and you feel that she's not the right person for the position. So your opinions vary on that. Second, the stakes are high. So you've enjoyed a good working relationship with this person. Their children are friends with your children. So the stakes are high. You want to retain that relationship. And then third, emotions. And emotions are what really are the tipping point or are something we need to manage. And people who learn to manage their emotions and help other people feel safe in a conversation are successful. So you're in the middle of that conversation with that volunteer and she says, you know, since you don't think I would be a good committee chair or have any talents or skills to offer, I might as well quit volunteering. And so that's an example that says to me, if I'm the person having that conversation, that this is turned crucial. This person feels offended in some way, perhaps is thinking I'm thinking things that I'm really not thinking, but the relationship is in jeopardy. So opposing opinions, strong emotions, and high stakes are what define a crucial conversation.
Which, as you describe those, that explains why you feel so bad afterwards. You're explaining that you walk away and just go, oh, wow, it's my fault that we're not colleagues anymore. That person isn't volunteering anymore. We're not friends anymore. There was a lot to lose there.
Yes.
And because of that immediate response, and we didn't have the skills of managing crucial conversations, that it maybe ended in a way we didn't want it to.
Yeah, you know, Carrie, I've done trainings with people who, and heard stories of people who had a bad conversation, bad interaction with a family member, a friend, and I'm sure we all can think of this, and that friendship was no longer. They don't talk to that family member. This isn't just in our professional lives. Our personal lives are often the places we need to have these conversations the most.
So there's a lot of benefit to improving our skills and having crucial conversations.
Yes, there is. There's a lot of benefit. It can help our personal life, our relationships. It can improve our career. It can improve our productivity. It can improve our relationships. It can even affect our health. It is very important to learn to handle them well. We only have really three options. We can avoid them. We can face them and handle them poorly and face them and handle them well. And the thing is that many of us, because of the way we're designed, you know, we don't often recognize I'm in a situation now where I need to trot out my best behavior. Things take over, the adrenaline, that's why really learning to see and observe and step out and be aware of when we're in those situations and how to get ourselves back to safety and the other person back to safety is so important.
As you mentioned, you have done a number of trainings with our staff around this topic. You're going to provide some tips for us today that we can think about now so that when we find ourselves in those crucial conversations, we're ready for it.
Yes. One of the first ones is to start with heart. It's an easy one to remember, start with heart. And that means that, you know, we can't solve a problem or get to the solution that we want if our own heart isn't in the right place. It's not about trying to change others. It's about looking at ourselves. If we can't get ourselves right, it's going to be hard to get into dialogue with that person and move forward. People who are what the authors call dialogue smart, those best of the best, they take a different approach. They work under the principle of work on me first and us second. And so they realize that they only completely control themselves. Oftentimes at training, people will ask, well, if I do these things, these people still act this way. What do I do? And it oftentimes we are just not seeing what is it about my role in the situation I'm not seeing is a good question to ask. Might I be sending a message that is contributing to this person reacting in this way? Then we need to really start focusing on what we really want. And the problem is too often instead we focus on winning. We want to be right. We'd rather be right than almost anything sometimes. So the next thing after start with heart is really focus on what you really want. Do you want to be right? Do you want to look good? Or do you want to learn? Do you want to save face or find the truth? Do you want to keep the peace so you just back down and take it? Or do you want to strengthen the relationship? Do you want to avoid conflict or do you want to resolve it in a way where both parties can move forward? So getting clear on what you really want is one of the most important things to do when you find yourself in a crucial conversation or you're planning to have one with somebody.
Which really does sound key to having these conversations because, number one, the first thing you mentioned, acknowledging that I want to win, that I'm right, that my way of thinking is the only way through this. I imagine you're encouraging us to take a step back and really say, okay, what do you really want? Is it worth, again, going back to that high stakes conversation, is it worth losing this friendship, losing a colleague's relationship, losing a volunteer, what, you know, whatever that relationship might be. If you step back and say, what do I really want here? I would guess in most of those situations, we're wanting to find a balance. We're wanting to find a common ground.
Right. Yeah. Or we should be. And if we're not, what we really want is to win, to be right. We have to consider what that leads to. And is it worth that? And very often it isn't. After you know what you really want, it's pretty important that you're able to master your stories. We all tell ourselves stories and our stories create our emotions. We really have to be able to separate those. If somebody acts a certain way, we might, based on our past experiences, assign all sorts of motives to that person. Why they did that. They've never liked me. They only care about their own kids. Then, because we assign those motivations without fact to those people and their actions, we then have some emotions that are negative, and we act out those emotions. So we act in self-defeating ways. And so we tell ourselves these stories and they impact the way and when which we behave to that other person. And so getting a hold of your stories is such an important part of this, being able to stop, take yourself out of that, not let yourself run with that story, and just look at the facts. And oftentimes the facts are a small part of what we're telling ourselves. So mastering your stories is pretty important. And then it's pretty important to be able to get other people to tell their story. If we behave in ways that show that we don't really care what they have to say, that we've already prejudged what they have to say, that we've made up our mind about what they have to say, then we're not going to get them to feel safe telling their story. And we have to hear their story.
As you're talking through these tips though, Brenda, wow, this one is the hardest one. How do you not use your experience and your history with this person? Or maybe you've been in this situation before with someone else and we immediately gravitate towards that experience. And that's what you're referring to as our story is what I have lived before. So I'm going to relive it again in this crucial conversation. And that suggestion of saying, wait, stop, and take this situation, the facts of this moment, and react with that data, not all of the experience you have from before.
It's hard, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And there's some signs in yourself and in the other person that should tell you that perhaps the conversation is going awry and that either you're not feeling safe or the other person isn't. And I give people a quick test. It's called the Style Under Stress Test. And you can take it actually if you go to vitalsmarts.com. We all have ways in which we typically act when we're under stress. Most of us either react towards silent behaviors, such as withdrawing from the conversation, avoiding, masking with our responses, or we tend towards kind of controlling the labeling and calling other people's names or attacking. We usually, most of us use both of those. When you see yourself starting to act that way, you have to have a third eye. People who are dialogue smart and are good at crucial conversations have a third eye. They're able to watch themselves, the other person, and pay attention to what's happening in the conversation and see when safety is at risk. So when I talk about safety, it's not so much physical safety, although that can certainly be the case, but then we're talking, you know, a whole nother level of things, but it's generally emotional safety. So when, you know, signs of danger appear and you're the one who's skilled at crucial conversations, you see those signs. You see people avoiding, withdrawing, not adding to the conversation, or you see people getting upset and throwing their information into the conversation and it turns to argument. There are some things that you have to do. You're the dialogue smart. You're the one who's good at it. And so you have to establish a mutual purpose to get back to that. And so there's a couple things. And when people start going and acting this way, they generally don't trust your motives or believe that you respect them. And if people don't trust motives or believe that you don't respect them, then you're not going to be able to move forward and get to where you want to get to with that conversation. And respect is particularly important. A lot of time it's mutual purpose. You're getting off of what you really want. And so you got to get that back. So using a contrasting statement is one skill you can try. And it's really a don't and do statement. And so you start it with what you don't want the person to think or feel, and then what you do. And so you get their attention with the don't. I don't want you to think that I am questioning your ability to do this job, or that I don't value all of the skills you bring to this work, because I really do. I want you to feel good about the contribution that you're making to this team. It's a don't and a do. And that's a good way to fix misunderstanding. And there's only one more tip I'll share, and this is sometimes we get in situations where it's so hard, people don't seem to want to talk, and all we can do is make a good faith effort. Making a good faith effort really requires, you know, two beliefs. We have to believe that the person we're talking to is a reasonable, rational, and decent person. It shouldn't be hard for us to do that, even if we disagree with them. We need to give people respect. And secondly, it requires that we have to believe that we're largely responsible for the conversation going sideways, be willing to do something to get it back on. So those are pretty important.
Really, you know, good tips and great examples that I think we can all relate to. So you've hooked me in. I want to learn more beyond this podcast. Tell us more about that book, the authors, and where we might go for more information.
Yes, this book is called Crucial Conversations, Tools for Talking When Stakes Are High. It's written by Kerry Patterson, Joseph Graney, Ron McMillan, and L. Schweitzer. These gentlemen have also formed a business. It's called Vital Smarts. You can go to vitalsmarts.com. But I have found the book to be one to have on your shelf. You don't need to read the whole thing in a sitting. The concepts in it and the tips and tricks are more than I can tell you in this time. But I pull it out so often to just be reminded of something. And it's just got good examples, good scenarios, based on real life situations in it. So I think you'll enjoy that. And like I say, the website.
Thank you for offering up those resources as we move forward. It gave us a lot to think about in terms of our own communication skills, looking within ourselves first, the importance of being mindful of our conversations, and then those tips that will help us to continually improve, and encouraging us to just keep learning, keep developing those skills. And you said you keep taking that book off the shelf. It's something that we can continually learn about ourselves and about the conversations we have with others. Now, as we bring this podcast to a close, I'd like to invite all of you to visit our website at www.extension.umn.edu/youth. You will have access to training, education, and other tools for all people who work with and on behalf of youth. Also, please check out the information on our Minnesota 4-H program if you're not already involved. Read and comment on our youth development topics covered in our Youth Development Insight blog, or join us for a live Youth Development Brown Bag webinar. Again, thank you for listening into this conversation, and Brenda, I appreciate you sharing your insights today. From the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development, please tune in again soon.